All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to the law firm of Davis and Davis. We're not a real law firm.
Go ahead, grab a beer, a glass of wine, sit back and listen.
Burke and I are here to welcome you back to part two.
Welcome back.
Where the hell is Clarksville? There's one in Arkansas. One in
sure, there's Texas. A mess of them, man. What are you talking about?
One in Tennessee.
Huh. Probably one in every state. What are you talking about?
How many?
I want to wrap up the Kirshner thing here. This is a paragraph at the very end of this website. Talking about Kirshner. Okay, so it would seem in the end, in the history of the monkeys, that Don Kirshner is simultaneously a hero and a villain. He did get Bob Raffleson and Bert Schneider songs when they needed them. He did generate hits for the monkeys. At the same time, however, he kept the monkeys from playing their own instruments, did not allow them to say in the songs have any say in the songs that they would perform, much less the ones that would be released as singles. And even released a single in violation of the rule of the Monkees could select the B-side. He may have also used reprehensible means to get a greater share of royalties from the Monkees songs for himself. The fact that Raybert Productions needed someone with the connections of Don Kirshner is unavoidable. The possibility that Don Kirshner may have actually hurt the Monkees more than he helped them seems likely. In the end, Kirshner was not something so simple as the silent movie serial villain that the Monkees fans often made him out to be, but something a bit more complex. So, yeah, he was almost like a necessary evil back in the day. So, anyway, that's all we got to say about that.
Thank you.
Now, the Monkees Mobile, do you remember that car?
Yes, I also know who made it.
Dean Jeffries. You know what else he made?
Do tell.
He made a big honking tri-wheeled monstrosity called the Landmaster for the 1977 movie Damnation Alley. And it's a badass looking all-terrain tanky kind of thing. And he also did the car for what was that spinoff from Batman that had Kato and Bruce Lee was in it? The Green Hornet. He made the Green Hornet mobile originally, but he made this badass GTO of the Monkees mobile, and it was this like long limo-ish convertible, had the blower sticking out the hood and the exhaust and back of the front wheels. Red, it was cool looking, man. So anyway, you got a little bit to talk about the TV show.
So the TV show, which started in 1966 and ran all the way till I think it was 1970.
67? No, it was only a couple seasons. It was 66 to 67, wasn't it?
66, 67, 68.
Oh, okay.
Raffleson, who we talked about earlier, actually directed a bunch of the television shows, but he also directed all the movies that they did. They ended up stopping the television show and started making movies because it was easier to build a Monkees movie. It was easier to, with the touring schedule, to make movies rather than full-fledged episodes of the television show.
Gotcha. Now, they only made the one, didn't they?
Well, according to this Raffleson, I was just reading this real quick, and it's the film conceived and edited in a stream of consciousness style, featured oddball cameo appearances by movie star Victor Mature, Annette Funicello.
Oh, yeah.
Terry Garr, Sonny Liston,
Frank Zappa,
stripper Carol Doda, Green Bay Packers linebacker Ray Nitzky, Frank Zappa. And that was it. And it was filmed on location in California, Utah, and the Bahamas.
It was called Head.
Very interesting movie. If you ever get the chance, go watch it.
Now, apparently Frank Zappa was a big fan of the Monkees, and he showed up on one of the episodes too. Yes. Him and Tim Buckley both appeared on the series.
Tim Buckley and Charlie Small. Oh, Charlie Smalls, who was the composer for The Wiz.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Anyways, the TV show was almost like a variety show in a way, but it was a variety show with a storyline.
Yeah, it was usually centered around them having to play a gig somewhere and stuff would happen to get in their way. Craziness would ensue.
They'd have no food. There was
no way to get to the show, whatever, the landlord was kicking them out. Yeah, it was kind of like, yeah, I can't, it is a really hard show to explain. You have to kind of experience it.
You just have to go and watch one. Actually watch a couple. The downfall of the television series was, with all the problems that were happening with Kirshner,
mm-hmm.
music was not being produced enough to keep doing shows after show after show. So they started reusing songs.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really the downfall of the television show. Now, that was not the end of the Monkees.
They were touring too.
They and toured and stayed together all the way till 1971.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I did not talk about, and forgive me, because literally Peter Tork and Michael Nesmith hated the Kirshner regime so much. They wanted their freedom to do what they wanted to do. They paid each of them around $160,000 to get out of their contract. Now, that's 1967 or 1968 money. That's damn near $1 million today, like $1.5 million to get out of their contract. So they could play their own music. They could play their own. They could do what they wanted to do. And it was pretty significant back then. I mean, that's a lot of dough.
Okay. I'm not trying to correct you here, but I'm going to correct you on this.
Oh, go ahead.
Peter Tork, citing exhaustion, quit by buying out the last 4 years of his Monkees contract at $150,000 a year. He paid 4 years. That was $500,000 to get out of his contract. Now, he wasn't the only one that did this, because Mickey Dolenz and Mike Nesmith did the exact same thing. And all of this was to get away from the iron fist of Kirshner, which is sad. But I can totally understand it. They had no creative control. I mean, when they got their royalty checks of $250,000 a piece, and was it Peter Tork that punched the hole in the wall?
No, it was Nesmith.
That was Nesmith.
Yeah.
I mean, the comment after that said they took their checks.
So what I'm gonna do is piss and moan like an impotent jerk and then bend over and take it up the tailpipe.
Because that's what Kirshner was doing to them the entire time.
It was funny because, like, I remember watching an interview with Tork, and he's like, you know, he showed up for recording thinking it was going to be the four of them recording music, and he had his instruments and he was all ready to go. And they're like, oh no, the music's already written. He's like, what? He's like, yeah, we just need your voice. He's like, okay. I mean, it was a really disjointed kind of thing for him. He was a real musician. He's like, I'm going to bring my music and play it. And, you know, so yeah, it was a weird gig. And back in the 60s, it was, you know, this stuff was in its infancy. They were making it up as they went.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is. We got some really great music out of it. We got some fun times. they got out of it. They, you know, but anyway.
Wow.
So we don't have to talk about Kershner no more.
Equal. Okay. I just saw the stat. When Torque bought himself out of the contract at $500,000, $150,000 per year for a 4-year contract. That is equal today to him paying $1.2 million a year.
Yeah, it was a big, big dollar amount.
That's a huge deal. And like I said, you can't blame them. You can't blame any of them.
Yeah. The bad news is, when you get paid royalties on a TV show, every time it gets shown, you get a little bit less and less and less and less. If their music comes back, however, they get paid full price for every time an album is sold. For some odd reason, and I was watching a David Letterman interview with Torque. He said, for some odd reason, the 4 albums started charting in Japan in like the 80s. And all of a sudden, he's getting buku bucks because it's the albums. He's getting full commission off the albums and everything. It's like such a weird, you know, it's Japan. They're into tentacles and shit. But, you know, they get hooked on something, they roll with it. So good for them.
Well, there was a lot of things that happened in the 80s. The revival of the Monkees television show on MTV.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get into the whole MTV connection here a little bit later on too, but yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. I got the whole Nesmith thing going on, so.
So, where should we go from here?
Do you want to talk about one of your guys? Could we split it up? I'm talking about Torque and Nesmith. You're talking about Dolenz and Jones. So who do you want to start with?
I'm going to start with Davy Jones.
Okay.
Davy Jones, born December 30th, 1945. Guess where he was born?
England.
Manchester, England.
Manchester, England, England.
That's right. Scott is a Manchester City fan, so this all works in together. He was born to a... I just had it. David Thomas Jones was born to Harry and Doris Jones. He has 3 sisters, Hazel, Linda, and Beryl.
Beryl?
B-E-R-Y-L. Beryl. Don't ask. Jones' mother died from emphysema when he was 14 years old.
Oh, geez. Oh, wow.
He started his television acting debut in 1961 on one of the largest British soap operas out there called Coronation Street.
Oh, God. I've heard about that. Yeah.
He appeared as Colin Lomax, grandson to the regular character Ina Sharples, for one episode on 6 March 1961. Now, we talked earlier, well, Burke and I did. I don't think we talked to the audience about this.
The studio audience.
He was not only a television actor, but he was a stage actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he starred he was going to be a jockey.
He was the Artful Dodger in Oliver.
Artful Dodger in a production of Oliver in London's West End. So, yeah, he...
Now, the movie that most people have seen of Oliver, that kid who played the Artful Dodger ended up on H.R. Puffin Stuff.
Yeah,
which was another trippy time in the 70s, but yeah, now, we won't go there.
Now here is, I totally got lost in my notes, and I apologize for that. here it is right here. He was trying to become a racing horse jockey.
Oh, with his, oh God, yeah, with his build, absolutely.
And Jones rejected many acting jobs in to pursue this career. He had an apprenticeship with Newmarket trainer Basil Foster. The Oliver job?
Yeah.
Guess who got him that?
Who?
Basil Foster.
Is it Basil?
It's Basil. Yeah. Even though Foster believed Jones would be a successful jockey, he encouraged his young protege to take the role as the Artful Dodger in Oliver. During the casting for the musical, Foster talked to the director and said, "I've got the kid."
He was probably full of piss and vinegar way back then, so
he played the role. He played the role in London and then went to Broadway.
Nice.
And was nominated for a Tony Award.
Very nice. He has some acting chops back in the day.
He definitely had some acting chops. On February 9th, 1964, Jones appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show with Georgia Brown, who was playing Nancy in the Broadway production of Oliver. This was the same episode of the show in which the Beatles made their first appearance.
He had no clue about them, did he?
I watched the Beatles from the side of the stage. I saw the girls going crazy, and I said to myself, this is it. I want a piece of that.
I want to make girls scream. Yeah, I read that little bit. Yeah, I was like, what? You didn't know who the Beatles were, and you were in England?
He did. He did, though. He had the look. He had everything. But from the Ed Sullivan Show, he actually got signed to a label to sing. Jones debuted on the Billboard Hot 100 in the week of August 14th, 1965 with the single What Are We Going to Do, which peaked at number 93. He was 19 years old.
Oh, wow. To be charting at 19, I mean, that's kind of like Def Leppard. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yes. From 1966 to 1970, Jones was a member of the Monkees. And he was a part of number one hits like Daydream Believer, several others. In Peter Tork's commentary, he stated that Jones was a good drummer and had the live performance lineups been based solely on playing ability, it would have been Davy Jones on drums. Now, after the Monkees,
I've got the same actual quote talking about Peter Tork. He said, what do you say? It should have been him on guitar, Nesmith on bass, Jones on drums, and Dolan's taking the fronting role. Instead, it was Nesmith on guitar, Tork on bass, Dolan's on drums. Jones filled in briefly for Tork on bass when he played the keyboard.
Yeah. Bell Records, then having a string of hits with the Partridge Family, signed Jones to a somewhat inflexible solo career contract, which started in 1971 after the Monkees had dispersed. Jones was not allowed to pick his songs or producers, resulting in several lackluster and aimless records. His second solo album, Davy Jones, was notable for the song Rainy Jane, which reached 52 on the charts. That was
never heard of it.
That was the only song of his
that wow
charted in his singles career. 1972, Dolenz, Jones, Boyce, and Hart. And what this was it was a Monkees reunion. Hmm. Minus Peter Tork and Mike Nesmith. And Mickey Dolenz went to Davy Jones when reruns of the Monkees started to make noise again in the 70s. And so Bell Records, which was owned by guess who?
For sure.
Screen Gems. they signed them to another record contract from 1975 to 1977, and they did songs with Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart instead of Nesmith and Tork, who were off doing kind of their own thing. Yep. You know, later in the 70s, this gets exciting. Do you remember Maureen McCormick?
That's the Brady Bunch, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Mr. Davy Jones made several appearances on several shows as cameos.
That's right. And
Davy Jones dated
himself. Dated her? Really?
Well, not for real.
Oh, okay.
On the television show, they
Okay.
But yes, Maureen McCormick was
Jan? No.
No, the
hot Marcia.
One. Marcia. Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. Jones returned to the theater actually in 1977.
What do you do?
He performed with former bandmate Mickey Dolenz in the stage production of Harry Nilsson's musical The Point.
Well, Harry Nilsson had written some of their music originally.
Yes. The starring role of Oblio went to Mickey Dolenz, and Jones.
Interesting.
Anyways, Jones and Dolenz, literally after this point, became kind of inseparable. They did everything together. They would do reunion tours, different stuff like that together, because Peter Tork and Nesmith,
they had other stuff going on. They had other obligations.
They had other stuff going on. There was a little bit of a tiff at one point in time.
Tork had some alcohol problems later in life too.
I was going to say it was Peter Tork who Nesmith and Tork were both asked to come back into the group.
Mm-hmm.
And Tork was the last one to come back. To no avail. It was not anything to do with Dolenz or Davy.
Yeah.
it was timing. There was a lot of stuff going on. There was
Nesmith had some obligations at one point. I remember, and I'm doing this off the top of my head. He said, yeah, if you guys are in LA, I will come play with you because I have obligations. I have to be in LA right now. So
there was freaking
I think Tork had to be made. I think Tork was heavy in his alcoholism at that point, if I recall.
I do believe so.
Yeah.
After the Monkees disbanded in 1970, Jones kept himself busy by establishing a New York City-style street market in Los Angeles called The Street, which cost approximately $40,000. He was also collaborating with musical director Doug Trevor on a one-hour ABC television special entitled Pop Goes Davy Jones, which featured new artists, the Jackson 5.
Oh.
And the Osmonds.
Little known bands.
Jones was married three times, had four children. And he married Dixie Linda Haynes, with whom he had been living with. The relationship had been kept out of the public eyes until after the birth of their first child in 1968. They didn't want anyone to know that Davy Jones was married.
Was unavailable.
Yeah.
Tiger Beat would be so upset.
Oh, so much so. The marriage ended in 1975. Jones married his second wife, Anita Pollinger, in 1981, and also has two daughters with her, Jessica Lillian Jones and Annabelle Charlotte Jones. The couple divorced in 1996 during a Monkees tour. Jones then married Jessica Pacheco.
Lord, man.
Jones and his wife appeared on the Dr. Phil show in April 2011.
That can't be good.
No, Pacheco filed for divorce in Miami-Dade, Florida, but dropped the suit in October. They were still married when he died in February 2012.
Wow.
On the morning of February 29th, 2012, Jones went to tend to his 14 horses at his farm in Indiantown, Florida. After riding one of his favorite horses around the track, he complained of chest pains and difficulty breathing. He was given antacids. He got in his car to go home. Just after 8 a.m., a ranch hand found him unconscious on the ranch, and an ambulance was called, but he could not be revived.
Wow.
Died of a heart attack at age 66. That's all I have for Mr. Davy Jones.
Yeah, that's like 9 years away from me. Fuck. Sobering thought.
Thanks. Yeah. I will say this. The news of Davy Jones's death triggered a huge surge in sales of Monkees albums.
Yeah.
Guitarist Mike Nesmith stated that Jones' spirit and soul lives well in my heart among all the lovely people who remembered with me the good times and the healing times. It was, well, God, I think I even got tore up when Davy Jones died.
Now, he was the first one to pass away, so we were all like, oh, crap.
Yeah. We're getting old.
Yeah.
Hopefully we don't die before 59 days in 1 hour.
I know, right?
Yeah, that's putting me.
So I will talk about Peter Tork now.
Okay.
And unfortunately, he was the next one to pass away. His full name is Peter Houston Torkelson. Born February 13th, 1942. Better known by his stage name of Peter Tork. Actor, musician, and actor. Grew up in Connecticut. In the 60s, he was part of the Greenwich Village folk scene in New York City. He befriended musician Stephen Stills. I was actually watching another thing where he literally heard something on high that said, get out of here. And he's like, what? Maybe he was high and heard somebody yelling from a window. I don't know. But he decided to go to Los Angeles. He moved there with Stills, auditioned for a new musical television sitcom, The Monkees. Da-da-da. His paternal grandfather was of Norwegian descent. His mother was half German, Jewish, and half Irish ancestry. I'm gonna have to read this. The DVD release of the first season of the show contains commentary from various band members. In it, Nesma states that Torque was better at playing bass or guitar than bass. This is the whole thing we just went over about they should have played this, this, and the other things.
Yeah.
Six albums were produced with the original Monkees lineup. Four reached number one. 2 years of television and programming. Trippy psychedelic movie Head, which is considered by some to be a hit of its time. The tensions, both musical and personal, were increasing in the group near the end there. Peter knew Jimi Hendrix and would often jam with him. He was actually big into the music scene. Like, he knew Mama Cass, dated Mama Cass's sister. He played the sitar with George Harrison. He was out there. He was a legit musician out there. And then the whole thing about when he was no longer digging the whole group dynamic, he pleaded exhaustion, got out of his ring, 4-year contract. Leaving him with little income, which kind of sucked. In the DVD commentary for the 33 and a third Revolutions per Monkey TV special, originally broadcast in 1969, Dolan's noted Nesmith gave Torque a gold watch as a going away present while engraving "From the Guys Down at Work." Jones noted at the time that Peter's soul left us 2.5 years ago. He was a banjo player from Greenwich Village who made it as an actor and finally decided he didn't want to be a Marx brother forever. His heart was back in the village, and that's all. It's funny because I was listening to another thing. All the three other guys basically played themselves. Torque played the goofy buffoon, tripping over crap, goofy kid. That was not him in real life. He was actually, he was political, metaphysical, spiritual. He would talk deeply about some really kind of deep subjects, and his character was kind of the polar opposite. So he was the odd man out when it came to his character. Nesmith was just playing himself, and Dolan's was playing himself, and he had to play some other person with his own name on the show, which kind of left him dissatisfied, you know?
Yeah.
Dolan's reflected on Torque's departure, saying three of us more or less play ourselves in the series. The odd one as Peter Torque. Yeah. Now, later on in life, Torque had a pair of appearances as the role of Topanga Lawrence's father,
Jebediah
Lawrence, in Boy Meets World. In his second appearance in 95, he joined Jones and Dolan's in season 3, episode 8, Rave On. Although they did not appear as the Monkees, Torque was again cast as Jebediah Lawrence, while Jones was Reginald Fairfield and Dolan's characters was Gordy. At the program's climax, the three took the stage together to perform a Buddy Holly song, Not Fade Away, and The Temptations' My Girl. So they actually got to play on TV, which is kind of cool. As an inside joke, actor David Madden, who is best known as the band manager Reuben Kincaid from the Partridge Family, cameoed as a manager who appeared wanting to manage this new group, telling him they could be bigger than the Beatles. Now, purportedly, both Nesmith and Patty Boyd, the former wife of Beatle George Harrison, attended the taping. On March 3rd, 2009, Torque reported on his website he had been diagnosed with adenoid cystic carcinoma, a rare, slow-growing form of head and neck cancer. On 09, he underwent surgery. On June 11th, 2009, a spokesman for Tork reported the cancer had returned. Tork was reportedly shaken, but not stirred. And the doctors had predicted an 80% chance of containing and shrinking the new tumor. And he was fine for a number of years after that. However, it did return in 2018. And that is when he passed away at his home in Mansfield, Connecticut, February 21st, 2019. 8 days after his 77th birthday and a decade after his diagnosis. Now, Nesmith said of all this in an interview, and we might have some of this here. Peter Tork died this AM. I'm told he slipped away peacefully. Yet as I write this, my tears are awash. My heart is broken. Even though I'm clinging to the idea that we all continue, the pain that attends these passings has no cure. It's going to be a rough day. I share with all Monkees fans this change, this loss. Even so, Peter will be part of me forever. I've said this before, and now it seems even more apt. The reason we called it a band is because it is where we all went to play. A band no more, and yet the music plays on. An anthem to all who made the Monkees and the TV shows our private, dare I say, secret playground. As for Pete, I can only pray that his songs reach the heights that can lift us and that our childhood lives forever. And that special sparkle, that was the Monkees. I will miss him, a brother in arms. Take flight, my brother. All right, Nesmith later commented, it's often difficult relationship with Tork. Actually, I have a clip here. If you've got it lined up, that would be awesome to play that right now.
2 cents. I never liked Peter and he never liked me. So we had an uneasy truce between the two of us. He was, as near as I can tell, among his peers, he was very well liked. I know Mickey liked him. But we barely had a civil word to say to each other. Hey, Pete, hey, Nez, and that was it. But I was sitting there when my assistant, Melody, got the call. Peter died. And I'm going to do it now. And I broke into tears. So do you. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I'm sorry.
You know, it's like siblings. Do you have siblings?
I do.
Well, need I say more?
Whether you grew up with the Monkees or were raised on them, when Mickey and Mike hit the stages in Australia.
So, yeah, it is weird because, like, you know, Nesmith and Tork did not get along, but they were a group. They were all brothers. You know, you've got a sibling that you don't get along with. You got a sibling you do get along with. And it was the same with these guys. So, yeah. But anyway, that's about all I have about Pete. Now, he did have. And I watched a couple other interviews, and they're really fun to watch. He was on Letterman, and he vacillates between trying to be the goofy Monkey and trying to be the intellectual Peter that he was. It's kind of tough to watch sometimes, but he had great success with the Monkees. He had horrible depression at one point. He had bad alcoholism. He beat it. There was a point in time where Peter Tork was playing for coins in New York in the late 70s because he was so broke, so drunk, so bad. But he got better. He got out of it. He got back with the other guys. You know, he showed up on TV shows and enjoyed the rest of his life immensely. It's funny, too, because, like, he's got gold albums and platinum albums from the Monkees. And they're in the back of a fucking closet. That wasn't his life. His life was how he wanted to live his life. He got heavily into, like, yoga and living on his parents' farm up north and just really enjoying his life until it ended in 19. So, yeah, that's a cool dude.
I can relate. No, I can. I mean, I was in the entertainment industry for a long time. My life's not there now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have one single award of the 300 awards I've gotten up on a wall. I can totally relate to when your life changes.
Yeah. Go with the new life.
I mean, you have to give Peter Tork a lot of accolades because his life went to shit.
Yeah, if you were Einstein playing Screech on TV, you'd be a little pissed off.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, you look at the rest of the band. Peter Tork had like the roughest road.
Yeah. He was the best them. Musician of the whole lot, possibly the smartest of the group, and got to play the idiot. Yeah, it kind of sucked.
Now, I have the Letterman interview with Peter Tork.
Is that the one where he dates the old lady, Esther?
Yeah. But it's 21 minutes long, so I'll put a link to it on the thing.
The website. DavisandDavisShow.com.
We're going to take a little break here. When we come back, I actually have an interview that I'm going to play the entirety of. I don't know if you guys will hear it or not, but Burke will, because it's 8 minutes long. But it's actually a really good interview that was done on CBS for the 50th anniversary of the Monkees. Very interesting piece. I think everyone needs to hear it. Burke and I will watch it and you can hear it. Yeah. All right. I need some music to go out on.
Maestro, please.
I think
I choose you.
Okay.
The tricks that you used on me. You're reading all them high fashion magazines. The clothes you're wearing, girl, are causing public scenes. I said, I'm not your stepping stone. I'm not your stepping stone. Oh! Not your stepping stone. You're walking around like your front page news. You've been awful careful about the friends you choose, but you won't find my name in your book of who's who. I said, I'm not your stepping stone.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, try not to suck any dick on the way through the parking lot.
Yeah, a little light trivia. You're going to talk about Dolan's next, correct?
Of course.
Okay, a little light trivia before we get into that. Did you know that Star Trek characters were inspired by the monkeys?
No.
Specifically, Chekhov.
Really?
By David Jones. Yeah, Star Trek Papa Gene Roddenberry was inspired by the monkeys to create a character of Chekhov during the second season of the original Trek series. He wanted to keep his teenage audiences in mind and aware of current trends. He said, let's watch for a young, irreverent English accent Beatle type to try on the show, possibly with an eye of him to be a reoccurring character. So that's where Chekhov came from, was David Jones.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Any other trivia?
They had random guest appearances like Liberace, who ended up destroying a piano with a golden sledgehammer at a performance art piece in a museum. Like, I don't remember that episode, but God, I want to watch it now.
Hell,
I know, right? Liberace killing a piano. I'd pay good money for that. Mike Nesmith. Nah, Dolan's no. Mickey and Peter directed episodes.
Yes.
Mickey also penned the story for the series finale. Peter used his full name as the director's credit as Peter H. Thorkelson. I love this one. They had a black box. Did you hear about this one?
No.
So these guys got along really well, to the point of it was disturbing the cast and crew and everything. They built a big black box where they could joke, jam, whatever they want to do. They had big flashing lights inside of the black box to let them know it's time to get back on set. It was like a big playpen for them, basically.
God, I love that.
You're going to talk about Dolan's. I'm going to save that in case you don't have it. I'm going to save that one. Okay, on tour, do you know who opened for the Monkees on tour?
Do tell.
Jimi Hendrix.
Damn.
Well, Pete knew him. Pete knew him. He opened up for like half of their first tour. Unfortunately, he wasn't very well known. And all these screaming teenagers were just screaming, "Get off the stage, we want to see the Monkees," which really kind of bummed out Hendrix. But like Pete loved to watch him. Like, you know, actually a couple of the guys from the band, they would get there early just to watch Jimi Hendrix open the show because they loved his guitar playing. So
so that the people know, Von Derosova, who won Wimbledon, went up 32 points or 32 slots in the rankings and is now almost in the top 10.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways, any more trivia?
I do, but I'm gonna, well, okay. Mike Nesmith wrote the song Different Drum, which was recorded by Linda Ronstadt and the Stone Ponies and became a number one hit. This was, I think, before the Monkees, if I'm not mistaken. So I have some stuff about Mickey. I'm not going to share it because you might have it. I have some stuff about Peter, which I have to talk about after I talk about Nesmith. Yes. Okay.
All right.
So please go on and tell us about Mr. Mickey Dolenz.
Well, before I do that, I'm going to do this.
Here we come.
In the fall of 1966, four madcap musicians, a mix of the Beatles and the Marx Brothers, made their debut on American television.
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees, and people say we monkey around.
For the next 58 episodes, the Monkees would turn pop culture upside down.
Don't you want to be famous, the idol of millions?
No, we just want to be revered by a small minority.
A small minority?
Small minority, small minority. Like a tribe of African pygmies. Get it? Pygmies, huh?
Half a century later.
Does the big 5-0 mean anything really to you guys? Or...
No.
Well, you have to ask
Thanks
us.
Thanks a lot.
Mike Nesmith, Mickey Dolenz, and Peter Tork are still monkeying around.
Then I saw her face.
The Monkees would outsell the Beatles and the Stones in 1967. Their first four albums went to number one.
I'm not your stepping stone.
A made-for-TV band, they were assembled by the show's producers, Bert Schneider and Bob Rafelson, who put this ad in Variety seeking four insane boys.
Not your stepping stone.
Mike Nesmith was playing at the Troubadour when a friend
came in and said, "I just saw this ad in Variety. I think you should go down and try out for it." So I did. I got the job.
He went to the audition in the same knit cap he'd wear for the show.
"I don't think I'm a goof."
"I don't think you're a goof."
"Right. Okay. I think I'm out of work. I hope I get this serious. But a goof? No, I'm not a goof."
"I didn't go to the cattle call. I'd already had a series, you'll see."
"Ah, so you're practicing to be a musician, huh?"
"Drummer boy."
Mickey Dolenz had had a lead in a show called Circus Boy. Peter Tork, a folk singer, heard about the auditions from his friend, Stephen Stills, who'd been passed over.
So Steve had to settle for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. He's never forgiven me.
"What do you want me to do?
Sing? I've got to dance one of your little quick things."
Davy Jones, a British actor who'd already had Broadway experience, completed the cast.
"Did the four of you connect pretty quickly?"
"Instantly. It was scary.
There were no duds among us."
"Yeah."
"Except me, but I wasn't really a dud. I played one on television."
"This cufflink contains a miniaturized tape recorder.
If I wear two of them, can I record in stereo?"
"You know, Bob said to me, well, Bob Rafelson,
So, well, we could have hired any four guys. I said, yeah, but you didn't. You hired us four. And said, well, but any four guys could do what you're doing. I said, no, they couldn't have. Because what we are, we brought the force of our character to it.
But the boys would butt heads with the show's music producer, Don Kirshner, who used outside session musicians to make the Monkees' first records.
I thought they wanted me to play for them.
No.
I was mistaken.
And how did you feel about that?
I was mortified. And this, they were doing Clarksville. And I wrote a counterpoint. I had studied music. And I brought it to them and they said, no, no, Peter, you don't understand. This is the record. It's all done. We don't need you.
Is it true that, that Davy Jones at one point dumped a Coca-Cola on top of Don Kirshner's head?
No, it was me. It was me. Life.
You did that?
It was me.
Oh,
he poured the Coke over his head, and I lost. And I think when I lost it, I think it really just made Donnie. It's like, oh, no, they're laughing at me. And it's like, yes, Donnie, we are.
Oh, those silly Monkees.
The fictional band became such a phenomenon, fans wanted to see them live.
It's like, well, now what?
So the producers finally allowed them to play. And their third album, Headquarters, was entirely their own. But critics had already branded the Monkees the Prefab Four.
It was a kind of, you guys aren't real. It's like, well, define your terms.
Fake band that became a real band that wasn't really real?
Well, yeah, see, now you're off in the weeds with me. Because I don't know the answer to that question, and Mick doesn't know, and if Peter says he does, he's lying.
So you felt like a band?
Well, you know, it's maybe.
I've often said it's like Leonard Nimoy really becoming a Vulcan.
The series ended after just two seasons.
Cross at the green, not in between.
He's been out in the sun too long.
He was no bargain in the shade.
And the Monkees eventually went their separate ways.
I've always feel blessed to have been part of this, you know.
Dolenz became a TV producer and director in England. Nesmith started his own band. So did Torque, who settled in Connecticut.
Who's here? The Monkees! Yeah.
But reruns have kept reintroducing the Monkees to new audiences. To mark their 50th anniversary, Dolenz and Torque have headed out on tour again. And the Monkees have recorded a new album. Produced by Fountains of Wayne frontman Adam Schlesinger, a longtime fan. Schlesinger reached out to other indie rock stars who loved the band. Ben Gibbard of Death Cab for Cutie, Britain's Paul Weller and Noel Gallagher, and Weezer's Rivers Cuomo have all written songs for the new Monkees record, Good Times.
It's a pretty impressive list.
It's a great list, isn't it? And again, me, lucky.
They say you need love to love.
They also unearthed an unreleased vintage Monkees track that features the late Davy Jones, who died of a heart attack in 2012.
Davy was something.
His loss was completely unexpected to you guys.
Mm-hmm. The youngest of us to go first.
When you first had to go out there without Davy, how did that feel?
Mickey said, well, how am I going to sing Daydream Believer?
Right.
And I said, well, you can't. It doesn't belong to us anymore. It belongs to them.
Sing along with Davy!
Oh.
could be your last tour?
No, we're going to tour again next year.
You are?
Absolutely. We'll tour until one of us drops. Then the other will go on as the monkey. Hey, hey.
That's awesome.
People say, I monkey around.
So you better get ready. We may be coming to your town.
Oh, my gosh.
That was wow. Awesome. I kind of wish I had played that first or earlier in the show.
Yeah, but I'm getting like teary-eyed watching them. Like, oh God, this is bad.
But it was it was very interesting seeing Peter Tork getting emotional about playing. I mean,
yeah, oh yeah, and they're right. I mean, they Dream Believer is totally. That Mickey's is, song. Yeah, that's his song. Nobody can sing it.
You mean Davy's song?
Davy, sorry. Yeah, Davy's, that's Davy's song.
And just, I mean, it was interesting in to me that through that interview, just hearing from Mickey Dolenz about the arguments with Kirshner and hearing from Peter Tork, who is a musician,
the best of them, almost arguably, yeah, the best technical musician.
Well, if he hadn't gotten this job, he would have been a part of Crosby, Stills and Nash,
probably.
So,
or some other folk group. I mean, he would have made it big regardless.
Yeah. That kind of brings us to a point where I'm gonna talk about a guy who has actually, I want to say, he's been the glue of the Monkees since their conception. He is the one guy who has always pulled these guys back together for tours.
True that, absolutely.
His name is Mickey Dolenz, and he was the drummer on the Monkees TV show, but he's not a drummer, and he will tell you that.
Yeah, I'm not a good drummer.
He is not a drummer. He was born at Cedars of Lebanon Hospital in Los Angeles, California, the son to actor George Dolenz and Janelle Johnson. He has three sisters, Gemma Marie, Deborah, and Kathleen. Gemma's nickname, Coco, is the shortened form of Coco Sunshine, a nickname given to her as a child by Mickey.
Coco Sunshine, man.
Coco Sunshine.
Zuzu Petals.
Dolenz suffered from Perthes disease?
I never heard of that.
Childhood hip disorder initiated by a disruption of blood flow to the head of the femur.
Huh.
Due to the lack of blood flow, the bone dies and stops growing over time. Healing occurs by new blood vessels infiltrating the dead bone and removing the necrotic. Okay.
Funky.
There you go. But this was why he always had a limp.
Mm.
And you don't notice it as much in the television shows, but if you see him later on stage and different things like that, he's always got a limp. Dolenz started his showbiz career. Do you know how?
He He was on a TV series or a movie.
Correct. TV series called Circus Boy.
Circus Boy, yeah. Yep.
Under the name Mickey Braddock. He played Corky, an orphaned water boy who basically fed the elephants.
Well.
God, another one where I'm gonna have to name like five wives.
Yeah, it seems like a couple of them had a couple of.
Dolenz originally had his own rock group called Mickey and the One-Nighters in the early 1960s, with himself as the lead singer. He had already begun writing his own songs. His band's live stage act included rock songs, cover songs, and even some R&B. One of his favorite songs to sing was Chuck Berry's Giant Be Good.
Good tune.
Very good tune. Hang on. My eye is bugging. In 1965, Dolenz was cast in the television sitcom The Monkees and became the drummer, even though he never drummed in his life.
Okay, I got a question for you. Sure. Do you know what other TV series he was seriously considered for?
The Partridge Family, wasn't it?
Nope.
What?
Because of his over 6 foot tall height, he was too tall to play the Fonz on Happy Days. Yeah, because he would have towered over all the other actors. He was seriously considered to play the Fonz, which I thought was fascinating.
Well, Mr. Dolenz did not just spend all his time in the music world. 1967, he acted in a movie called Good Times with Sonny and Cher.
Interesting.
68 was Head.
Uh-huh.
72, Night of the Strangler.
Interesting.
75, Linda Lovelace for president.
Oh my God.
75, Keep Off My Grass. 93, Deadfall. That was James Coburn, I think.
Oh
James,
my God.
James Coburn and Nicolas Cage.
Really?
Yep. 1999, Invisible Mom.
Seriously?
Yep.
Holy cow.
2001, Malpractice, he directed.
Shit.
2007, Halloween.
He was in Halloween?
Yep.
No kidding.
And 2011, Mega Python versus Gatoroid. But he spent the majority of his time, and I'll tell you, over 54 credits for television.
Oh yeah, I can see that.
He was in Batman the Animated Series.
Oh cool.
Boy Meets World.
Yep we covered that. Yep.
Difficult People. There were some up here that I was really. He was in Canon. He was on Adam 12.
Oh, wow.
My Three Sons.
Holy crap. That's going back a couple of years.
Ronan Martin's Laughing.
Laughing. Yeah, I think all of them showed up on Laughing at one point in time.
All of them starred as the Monkees.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were all in there. Zane Grey Theater. And if you don't know who Zane Grey was, that was it was a variety show, basically.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, absolutely.
The Scooby-Doo Show.
Well, he
was the voice of Mamba Wamba and the Voodoo Hoodoo. Partridge Family 2200 AD. I think that was an animated thing.
Yeah, that had to be an animated thing. Yeah.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids.
No. No.
He was the voice of Wally.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep. And he was in The Tick.
Oh, wait, which one?
94 to 95. He was 13 episodes. And he was the voice for Arthur, Arthur Clone, and Captain Lemming.
Oh, that was the animated one. That was a really good one. Yeah. That was an awesome show.
The Secret Files of the Spy Dog.
I remember that.
And he was on the Drew Carey Show.
Oh, God, that's awesome.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It gets even better. He played a vicar on As the World Turns.
Oh, my God.
His television career was huge. He was a director for a lot of years, and I didn't even name off the credits for his directing. Well,
he and Peter directed a couple of episodes of The Monkees.
Yeah.
Mickey penned the story for the series finale, The Frotis Capper, and Peter took the helm behind the scenes in the episode The Monkees Mind Their Manor.
Now, do you know what Mickey Dolenz did in 2019?
No. I don't remember.
He went out on a tour. He went out on a tour in celebration of the Beatles. It was their Beatles album. It was 50 years ago today. Or it was the White Album.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
They were honoring, but he played with Todd Rundgren,
ooh,
Jason Scheff,
okay,
Christopher Cross,
oh,
and Joey Molland, and they went and played Beatles songs all across America.
That's kind of cool.
During the show, Dolenz would perform I'm a Believer and Pleasant Valley Sunday. Dolenz has been married three times and is the father of four daughters in 1967 while in the UK on tour with the Monkees. Dolenz met future wife Samantha Just, a co-presenter on BBC's Top Pops TV show. Top of the Pops.
Yeah, shocker.
They married in 68 and their daughter Amy Bluebell Dolenz was born. And you can look Amy Bluebell Dolenz up. She is an actress. Dolenz and Just divorced in 1975 but remained close friends until her death of a stroke in February 5th, 2014. He married Trinidad Dow in 1977. The couple had three more daughters.
Oh, my God.
He is a girl machine.
That would have been me if I hadn't got clipped.
Charlotte Janelle, Emily Claire, and Georgia Rose. They divorced in 1991. Trinidad Dow Dolenz has become a couples therapist, still using her married name. Dolenz married his third wife in 2002, Donna Quinter. They are actually still married. Mickey Dolenz,
that's kind of impressive, actually.
Mickey Dolenz is still alive at this point in time, so I can't tell you his form of death or any of that stuff. That's about it for Mickey Dolenz. Mickey Dolenz has been the glue of the Monkees. I have said this before earlier. He is stated in interviews that he has kept the monkeys going. And I totally believe that, because there were several Mike Nesmith, Peter Tork, who left and were really kind of done with the monkeys.
Yeah, I know that Tork, he had personal issues, he had alcohol issues. I know Nesmith was because he had a lot of career after the monkeys and had obligations he couldn't get away from. So yeah, I absolutely, I can see that. Okay, so I have a little tidbit about Mr. Dolenz that you didn't go
over. Ooh, I'm ready.
He lived next door to Alice Cooper. The Alice Cooper. Oh, they played softball. I didn't know together. That. They played softball together on
was
a team called
Arizona or
No, this is LA. They played softball together on a team called the Hollywood Vampires. This was a group that Alice Cooper was the president. The vice president was Keith Moon. Other members were John Lennon, Ringo Starr, Harry Nilsson, and Mickey Dolenz. They would hang out at this bar in LA, and to get into the group, you had to outdrink the group. Mickey at one point in a radio interview had claimed that Charles Manson had auditioned for the monkeys. This was a falsehood. Stephen Stills, however, actually did audition for the monkeys. So that's, I think, all the stuff I have about Mickey. Yeah, that's all the stuff I have about Mickey Dolenz in there. So,
all right, sir.
So now I get to talk about Mr. Mike Nesmith. Now, to preface this, when my mom and I moved back to Akron in 1976,
my baby daddy.
Yeah, we were living with her mom and Ellet. We eventually got a little apartment over in West Akron in 1980 or something like that. We did not have a lot of money. She was a single mom. She was working midnights at a hospital. We did things like we would go to the downtown Akron library, find books, whatever, found a little corner in the Akron library, and they had video cassettes that you could rent for free because it was the Akron library. And one of these and then let me tell you, I listened to all of the Monty Python albums, Bob Newhart, all the old comedians, everything. But I found a video cassette after we had enough money to get a VHS. Found this video cassette called Elephant Parts by Michael Nesmith and watched it, and I was blown away. I'll get there in a minute. So anyway, Mr. Michael Nesmith, born Robert Michael Nesmith on December 30th, 1942, an American musician, songwriter, and actor. He was born in, do you want to tell us where?
No, tell me.
Houston, Texas.
Oh, what a crap city.
After his parents divorced, Nesmith and his mother moved to Dallas to be closer to her family.
What a great city.
She took temporary jobs ranging from clerical work to graphic design. She eventually attained the position of executive secretary at the Texas Bank and Trust. When Nesmith was 13, his mother invented the typewriter correction fluid, later to be commercially known as liquid paper. Over the next 25 years, she built Liquid Paper Corporation into an international company, which she then sold to Gillette in 1979 for $48 million. And she actually died just a few months after that at the age of 56. Now, Nesmith attended the Tom Jefferson High School in Dallas, where he participated in choral and drama activities, but he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force in 1960 before graduating. Yeah, he completed his basic training at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, trained as an aircraft mechanic at Shepherd Air Force Base in Wichita Falls, and was permanently stationed at the Clinton Sherman Air Force Base near Burns Flats in Oklahoma, obtained his GED certificate, and was honorably discharged in 1962. Now, we had talked about people buying out their contracts. He was also one of the gentlemen who bought out his contract from Kirshner at $160,000 for his 4 years, because he wanted the band to actually play actual instruments and write their own music. So after the breakup of the Monkees, Nesmith continued his successful songwriting and performing career. He was actually with a country rock group called the First National Band. They had a top 40 hit called Joanne, what he did as a solo artist. He also founded Pacific Arts, a multimedia production and distribution company in 74. It helped pioneer the music video format. He created one of the first American television programs dedicated to music videos called Pro Clips, which aired on Nickelodeon in 1980. He was asked to help produce and create MTV. Unfortunately, he had prior commitments with his production company. He gave them the rights to go do that. And that became MTV. So Michael Nesmith is the great grandfather, or the grandfather of MTV. He was the first person to win a Grammy Award for Video of the Year. And this was for his hour-long television show called Elephant Parts. And by the way, he was also the executive producer on the film Repo Man in 1984. So I have, I think this is the 138 mark video. If you would play that for him, I could be totally wrong. I'm getting a little, I'm drinking Weller's and ginger ale now, so I could be totally wrong, but go ahead and play that one clip at the 138 mark, if you would.
Strangers to Australia, and it was right here that Mike Nesmith created a fake news story that went viral.
Did you or did you not up a lie and tell an Australian
news journal? Oh, did I ever?
Journo?
I was up to my eyeballs in media veracity, which means, are these guys lying to us? Which was,
you mean fake news?
Well, and you can have it if you want to. I'm loath to repeat anything Trump says, but if, you know, there you are. And so when we sat down, he said, well, what would you like to talk about? I said, well, I'm happy to talk about anything you want to talk about, but I'm going to lie the whole time. he said, so the Monkees, very popular. How many records did you guys sell? I went, I said, 35 million. That's bigger than the Rolling Stones and the Beatles combined in 1963. He said, really? How many? I said, 35 million. And I thought, I wonder how far this is going to make it in the media stream. Well, it turns out it's made it all the way to now. You know, you may not know this, but I'm 94 years old. And it made it all the way to now, and it's still out there.
I did something similar on a radio show in Los Angeles in the early days when I was asked about who had auditioned for the Monkees.
Oh, I love this show.
And I was like, well, Stephen Stills, which is true.
That's possible.
Really? Stephen Stills did?
He was. No, I know he did. Stephen Stills did. Paul Williams, the famous singer-songwriter.
Plausible.
And then I just straight-faced, I said, and Charlie Manson.
Yes!
He was singing and playing with, you know,
the Beach Boys.
With Dennis Wilson.
And Charlie Manson.
Yes!
Straight face to this day.
It's
one of the first
there.
Questions I ever get asked
in the books.
So anyway, they were full of piss and vinegar from day one, and it never left them, which is awesome. But Mike Nesmith made this I don't even know how to describe it. I got this VHS. It was called Elephant Parts. It is based on the joke about three blind men trying to identify what animal they are that is in front of them by touching the different parts of the elephant. That's where the joke comes from. But
the few, the proud, the Marines. It's certainly not for everybody, but if you're out of school and ready for something special and a choice of over 100 career fields to choose from, today's Marines may be what you're looking for. You'll be part of a team on the job serving around the world. The challenge is great, but the reward is greater. If you think you're ready for a new kind of adventure, call your recruiter today and find out how you can become one of the few, the proud, the Marines. How was that? It was good for me. Was it good for you?
We'll give you a call.
Thank you.
This whole video, it was a vignette of comedy, a song, a vignette of comedy, a song. The whole hour-long video of this old stuff. And it's funny as hell because I remember hearing this one song on the radio, and I had no clue that it was Mike Nesmith of the Monkees playing it. And that is the Lucy and Ramona song. Do you have that lined up somewhere?
Is that
even the nicest neighborhood can be spoiled by neighbors?
This is funny though.
Let's see here. I have Rio, I have Joan something, and I have Crew.
Yeah, try that last one.
Lucy and Ramona cruising through the jungles of L.A. Hoping to promote a dream somewhere along the way. They're rolling through the streets looking for a disco, passing up the treats from a kid named Cisco, trying to make connections with their bluish food complexions, and just as fate would have it, ended up with Sunset Sand.
Almost has a funk beat to it.
Dude, this song charted. I remember hearing this on the radio. It was I was like, oh my God, that's the Monkees, dude, playing that. This whole hour long VHS had these really cool songs and really cool videos. Like, some of it was black plastic garbage bags that were shredded into small thin strips, waving around with lights playing on them. He did everything that you could do in the early 80s that didn't have anything to do with special effects to make it look cool. They used some like blue screen background and stuff like that, but it was kind of amazing to watch that you could put a song and watch this video story behind it. It had never been done before. It was obviously revolutionary, and what started MTV. It was pretty cool. Now Rio is another song. I don't know if it charted or not, but it was a really cool song and a really cool video. I think you've got a bit of that on there somewhere too, if you got that to play.
I'm hearing the light from the window. I'm seeing the sound of the sea. My feet have come loose from their moorings. I'm feeling quite wonderfully free. And I think I will travel to Rio, using the music for flight. There's nothing I know of in Rio, but it's something to do with the night. It's only a whimsical notion.
Good yacht rock.
Yeah. Just sit on the back of the boat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sipping some rum.
And then I think you've got one more comedy bit, and that's the NSS bit, if you got that to play.
Even the nicest neighborhood can be spoiled by neighbors. It's no good to complain. It will still go on day after day, week after week. At NNS, we know people are just no damn good. Are you mad? Are you really mad? Are you really, really mad? Then it's time for you to call us today and learn about NNS, Neighborhood Nuclear Superiority. Not an import, not an over-the-counter toy, or an unreliable terrorist imitation. The NNS system is made here in America, by Americans, for Americans. And by producing millions of them, we pass the savings on to you. For any size target, from something as big as a city block to something as small as a doghouse.
I called NNS, and they really helped by inflaming my natural paranoia and reinforcing my territorial imperative. And you know what? This tactical nuclear warhead just attached to my garden hose with ordinary hand tools. Oh, jeez. Well, you don't want to drop one of these babies. Thank you, folks at NNS.
That's right. The courteous, helpful folks at NNS have the weapon that's right for your family.
This offer not available in any store. Call today and learn more about this amazing system. Isn't there someone you know who deserves Neighborhood Nuclear Superiority?
Good shit.
So wrong. On so many levels.
There are so many good skits on that. There was the Name That Drug game show where a druggie and a DEA agent were smoking, trying to figure out what they were smoking, and the DEA agent got so fucked up he fell over, passed out. If you can get your hands on a copy of that, it's well worth a watch. It's just so good. And it is, you can tell it all came from the monkeys. Comedy bits, music, comedy bits, music. It was good stuff.
So the monkeys, who outsold the Beatles.
Well, that's just it, man. It's like I was looking at the stats, and apparently they sold about 18 million albums. They may have outsold the Beatles at one point, and they may have kicked them off the charts, but they did not sell 35. Dude, I looked up, I don't know, 10 different websites, and they all claim the whole 35 million albums, and it's a total lie. And to this day, it's a total lie. It's awesome.
Man, you gotta love Mickey Dolenz. All right. I think we're at about the end of this.
Yes. Yes, we are. We got two little pieces of trivia, but we can pick that up here in a second.
We do?
Yeah.
What do you have?
Actually, I have one more. MTV, because, you know, Nesmith kind of made MTV. MTV kind of gave back to Nesmith. In 1986, they aired a weekend marathon of the Monkees TV shows, which helped introduce them to a new generation. They had found, because Davey, Peter, and Mickey were on a 20th anniversary tour, and it started with them playing theaters and ended with them playing in arenas because of MTV playing all those original shows again. So kudos to MTV.
Gotta love the monkeys.
That's it. That's all I got.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. I know that this was 3-4 hours long. Oh, my God.
It was a little bit much, but yeah, it's good stuff.
But I said we were going to deep dive into this, and I'm glad that we did. I hope you enjoy the monkeys. You can find their videos online. You can find their TV show online. Buy their music. Mickey Dolenz still has to feed a family.
A lot of them.
He's the only one left, right?
Yes, because Nesmith passed away in 21 or where'd it go? Yeah, he passed away in December 10th of 2021. So there's only one left. Ugh. Bless you.
I'm already yawning. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Davis and Davis Show. DavisandDavisShow.com. We'll have all the information and links to the videos that we played tonight.
Videos, interviews, and whatnot. And if you want some cool merch, please visit the DavisandDavisShow.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back next week, and next week we are doing the Putin Bay special.
Cool.
We will have interviews that we did last year at the race. We'll have stuff
behind
to go
the
and
scenes stuff. Yeah.
And we'll have a kind of a list of stuff of things to do when you are on Putin Bay Island. Our favorite bars to go to, the favorite places to eat. We'll have a list.
The places that you don't want to be a pretentious asshole at that I visited.
Wait.
That was the martini bar. I was a douche.
Oh, shit. You were kind of a douche there.
I was a total douche. If I can find that poor guy, I'm going to give him a big old tip.
Do you know what a dry martini is? Oh, God. Oh, God. You know,
all right, kids,
when Bob Kanza looks at you with the look and you go, uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Bob's the one giving me the look, oh, man, I don't
know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back next week. We'll talk at you later.
Have a good night. We'll see you later.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.